Welcome to a special radio presentation of The Art of Racing in the Rain by Garth Stein. We're preempting our normal broadcast to the BBC for this adaptation of this year's One Book, One Denver selection. This is a third of four parts and was produced by students and faculty of the University of Colorado Denver College of Arts and Media. We'll resume our regular airing of the BBC on Friday.
Six months came and 6 months left, and Eve was still alive. On the 1st of May, Denny and I were invited to the twins for dinner, which was unusual because it was a Monday night, and I never went with Denny on a weeknight visit. We stood awkwardly in the living room with the empty hospital bed while Trish and Maxwell prepared dinner. Eve was absent. I wandered down the hallway to investigate, and I found Zoe playing quietly by herself in her room. She was immersed in her dollhouse and didn't notice me enter. I spotted a sock ball on the floor, and I playfully dropped it at Zoe's feet. "Let's play," I said.
"That's a baby's game. I have to be grown up now."
My little Zoe, a grown-up at her tender age, a sad thought. Disappointed, I walked slowly over to the door and looked back at her over my shoulder.
"Sometimes bad things happen. Sometimes things change, and we have to change, too."
She was speaking someone else's words, and I'm not sure she believed them or even understood them. I returned to the living room and waited with Denny until finally, Eve emerged from the hallway where the bedroom and bathrooms were. The nurse who spent her breaks obsessively knitting with metal needles that drove me mad was helping Eve walk. And Eve was brilliant.
"Today is the first day I'm not dead, and we're having a party."
The party was festive. Everyone was happy, and those who were not pretended that they were with such conviction that we were all convinced. Even Zoe came alive with her usual humor, apparently forgetting for a time her need to be a grown-up. When the hour came for us to leave, Denny kissed Eve deeply.
"I love you so much. I wish you could come home."
"I want to come home. I will come home."
She was tired, so she sat on the sofa and called me to her. I let her rub my ears while Denny was helping Zoe get ready for her bedtime.
"I know Denny's disappointed. They're all disappointed. Everyone wants me to be the next Lance Armstrong. And if I could just grab it and hold it in front of me, maybe I could. But I can't hold it, Enzo. It's bigger than me. It's everywhere."
In the other room, we could hear Zoe playing in the bath, Denny laughing with her, as if they had no worries in the world.
"I shouldn't have allowed it to be this way. I should have insisted on going home so we could all be together. That's my fault. I could have been stronger. But Denny would say we can't worry about what's already happened. So, please take care of Denny and Zoe for me, Enzo. They're so wonderful when they're together."
She shook her head to rid herself of her sad thoughts and looked down at me.
"Do you see? I'm not afraid of it anymore. I wanted you with me before because I wanted you to protect me. But I'm not afraid of it anymore. Because it's not the end."
She laughed the Eve laugh that I remembered.
"But you knew that. You know everything."
Not everything. But I knew she had been right about her situation. Your car goes where your eyes go. We took our leave, Denny and I. I didn't sleep in the car on the ride home as I usually did. I watched the bright lights of Bellevue and Medina flicker by, so beautiful. I am thinking of Eve and what she said. It is not the end. She died that night. Her last breath took her soul. I saw it in my dream. I saw her soul leave her body as she exhaled, and then she had no more needs, no more reasons. She was released from her body, and being released, she continued her journey elsewhere, high in the firmament where all the souls gather and play out all our dreams and fears and hopes. For Eve, her death was the end of a painful battle. For Denny, it was the beginning.
"The people from Bonnie Watson will take her now,"
Trish said.
"We'll bury her with our family. It's what she wanted."
"I know. When?"
"Before the end of the week."
What can I do?
We'll take care of the arrangements,
Maxwell said.
But we did want to speak with you about something.
Denny waited for Maxwell to continue, but he didn't.
Well, Eve's passing is obviously a terrible tragedy. Still, we've been anticipating it for many months. Maxwell and I have discussed at great length our lives, the lives of all of us, in the aftermath of Eve's death. We discussed with Eve as well, just so you know, and we believe that the best situation for all parties involved would be for us to have custody of Zoe, to raise her in a warm and stable family situation, to provide her with the kind of upbringing and, well, not to be gauche, but privileges we can provide for her. We think it will be best. We hope you understand that this is in no way a commentary on you as a person or your fathering abilities. It is simply what is in Zoe's best interest.
You can't have custody of Zoe.
I know this is hard for you, but you have to agree.
You can't have custody of Zoe.
I told you he wouldn't.
If you could just sleep on it. I'm sure you'll see that what we're doing is right. It's best for all. You can pursue your racing career. Zoe can grow up in a loving and supportive environment. It's what Eve wanted.
How do you know that? She told you?
She did.
But she didn't tell me.
I don't know why she wouldn't have.
She didn't.
Trish shook her head in dismay. Maxwell reached into his back pocket and removed a business envelope.
What's this?
Open it.
Then he opened the envelope and removed several sheets of paper. He glanced at them briefly.
What does this mean?
I don't know if you have a lawyer, but if you don't, you should get one. We're suing for custody of our granddaughter.
Denny flinched like he had been punched in the gut.
I finished my egg.
None of us had noticed her return, but there she was. She climbed onto Denny's lap.
Are you still sad?
Yes, I'm still sad.
Me too.
Zoe, you run inside and pack your things, okay?
Where are we going?
We're going home now.
Zoe smiled and started off, but Maxwell stepped forward.
Zoe, stop right there. Daddy has some errands he has to run. You'll stay with us for now.
How dare you? Who do you think you are?
I'm the one who's been raising her for the past 8 months.
Zoe looked from her father to her grandfather. She didn't know what to do. No one knew what to do. It was a standoff.
Run inside and put your dolls together while we talk a little more.
Zoe reluctantly withdrew.
Let her stay with us, Denny. We can work this out. I know we can work it out. You were fine with her staying here before.
You begged me to let her stay here.
I'm sure we can work this out.
No, Trish. I'm taking her home with me.
And who's going to take care of her when you're at work? When you're off at your races for days at a time, who will take care of her if, God forbid, she were to get sick? Or would you just ignore it, hide it from the doctors until she was on the verge of death like you did with Eve?
I didn't hide Eve from the doctors.
And yet she never saw anyone.
She refused. She refused to see anyone.
You could have forced her.
No one could force Eve to do anything Eve didn't want to do, and you know that.
Maxwell clenched his fists tightly. The tendons in his neck bulged.
I regret the day she met you.
Then he stopped at the door and called inside.
Zoe, let's go now. We can stop by later and get your dolls.
Zoe emerged, looking confused, holding an armful of stuffed animals.
Can I take these?
Oh, yes, honey, but let's go now. We'll come back later and get the rest.
We walked around to the driveway and got into our car. Maxwell followed us and watched as Denny strapped Zoe into her car seat. Denny started the engine.
You are going to regret this. Mark my words.
Denny pulled the driver's side door closed with a slam that shook the car.
Do I have a lawyer?
He said to himself.
I work at the most prestigious BMW and Mercedes service center in Seattle. I have a good relationship with all the best lawyers in this town, and I have their phone numbers.
We pulled out of the driveway with a spray of gravel at Maxwell's feet, and as we took off up the idyllic, twisty Mercer Island Road, I couldn't help notice that the white funeral van was gone, and with it, Eve.
Thank you.
Zoe insisted on going to school the next day.
I'll pick you up a little earlier than I usually do,
he said when we dropped her off. He must have been afraid that Trish and Maxwell would try and steal her away. From Zoe's school, we drove up Union, directly to a coffee shop where Denny tied my leash to a bicycle stand and went inside. He returned a few minutes later with coffee and a scone. He untied me and told me to sit underneath an outdoor table, which I did. A quarter of an hour later, we were joined by someone else.
Good morning, Dennis. Please, accept my sincere condolences for your devastating loss.
Of course.
Good-looking dog. He has some terrier in him?
I lifted my head. Me?
I don't know exactly. Probably.
I was impressed that he noticed me at all.
You've got a lot on your mind. This consultation will cost you an oil change. An oil change whether or not you decide to retain me.
Fine.
Let me see the paperwork.
Denny handed him the envelope Maxwell had given him. The man took it and removed the papers.
They said Eve told them she wanted Zoe to be raised by them.
I don't care about that. She may have said it, but she couldn't have meant it. I don't care what anyone has said or why they said it. Children are not chattel. They cannot be given away or traded in the marketplace. Everything that happens will be done in the best interest of the child.
That's what they said. Zoe's best interest.
They're educated. Still, the mother's final wishes are irrelevant. How long were you married?
6 years.
Any other children?
No.
Any secrets?
None.
The man drank his latte and leafed through the papers. He was a curious man, full of twitches and extra movements. The man's attention was in many places at once. And yet, when he locked eyes with Denny, I could sense the totality of his focus. Denny could too.
Are you in a drug treatment program?
No.
Are you a sex offender?
No.
Have you ever been convicted of a felony? Spent any time in jail?
No.
The man stuffed the papers back in the envelope.
This is nothing. Where is your daughter now?
She wanted to go to school. Should I have kept her at home?
No, that's good. You're being responsive to her needs. I'll demand a summary judgment. I can't see why we won't get it. The child will be yours, free and clear.
By the child, you mean my daughter, Zoe?
Yes, I mean your daughter, Zoe. This is Washington State, for Christ's sakes. Unless you're cooking meth in your kitchen, the child is always awarded to the biological parent. No question.
Okay.
Be cool with them. Don't get angry. Be polite. Call them and give them my information, and tell them all correspondence has been directed to me as your attorney.
Got it.
The man paused solemnly.
What's his name?
Enzo.
Good name. Good-looking dog.
He's upset. I'm taking him to work with me today. I don't feel comfortable leaving him home alone.
Maybe you should take some time off. Your wife just passed away. Plus this nonsense. Craig will give you some time off.
Denny smiled, but it was without conviction.
You're a good man, Dennis. I'll take care of this. You will let me worry about this part, and you can take care of your daughter, okay?
Thanks.
Mark trundled off down the street, and when he had rounded the corner, Denny looked at me and held his hands out in front of himself. They were shaking. He didn't say anything, but he looked at his hands trembling, and then he looked at me, and I knew what he was thinking. He was thinking that if he just had a steering wheel to hold onto, his hands wouldn't shake. If he had a steering wheel to hold onto, everything would be all right. I knew all the guys in the garage. I didn't go to work very often, but I'd been there enough that they all knew me. I felt strangely anxious that day, in a very human way. One of the garage bays was open and a sticky drizzle fogged the air. The day seemed like it would never end, until the Seattle police car showed up and two policemen got out.
Are you Dennis Swift?
Craig, Denny's boss in the garage, stopped what he was doing. I could smell his sudden tension.
I am not.
Is he here?
I'll go get him. Can I tell him who's calling?
We have a warrant for his arrest.
I followed him into the back, where Denny was at the computer logging in invoices.
Den, there's a couple of cops out front with a warrant.
For?
You.
Denny stopped what he was doing.
For what?
I didn't get the details.
Denny stood up and started for the lobby. Like a train, the three of us snaked through the file room and up to the counter.
I'm Denny Swift.
We have a warrant for your arrest.
For what? Can I see it? There must be some mistake.
The cop handed Denny a sheaf of paper. Denny read it.
You're joking.
No, sir. Please place your hands on the counter and spread your legs.
Denny followed their instructions and placed his hands on the counter.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be held against you.
How long is this going to take? I have to pick up my daughter.
I suggest you make other arrangements.
I can pick her up.
You're not on the list of approved pickup people.
Who should I call?
Call Mark Fine, my attorney. He's in the computer.
Do you understand these rights as I have read them to you?
Call Mark. Maybe he can pick up Zoe.
Do you understand these rights as I have read them?
I understand, yes. I understand.
What are you being arrested for?
Denny looked to the officers, but they said nothing.
Rape of a child in the third degree.
Felony rape.
But I didn't rape anyone. Who's behind this? What child?
There was a long pause. Everyone wanted to know the answer to this question. What child?
The one you raped.
Without another word, the police took Denny away. Much of what happened to Denny regarding the custody suit concerning Zoe, as well as the criminal charges of rape of a child in the third degree, was not witnessed by me. These events spanned close to 3 years of our lives, as one of the tactics of Maxwell and Trish was to drag out the process in order to deplete Denny of money and destroy his will. I was denied access to much information. I was allowed to attend only a few of the meetings. And much of what I will tell you is compiled by me from secondhand knowledge I have gleaned from various television shows, most especially the Law and Order series and its spin-offs, Special Victims Unit, Criminal Intent, and a masterpiece of the genre, The Rockford Files, starring James Garner, who also starred in the excellent racing film Grand Prix, and of course, the greatest of all police dramas, Columbo, starring the fabulous and exceptionally clever Peter Falk in the title role. My sixth favorite actor is Peter Falk. And finally, my knowledge of all the courtroom dramas is based solely on the work of the greatest of all courtroom dramatists, Sidney Lumet, whose many films, including The Verdict and 12 Angry Men, have influenced me tremendously. My intent here is to tell our story in a dramatically truthful way. They took him to a small room with a large table and many chairs. The walls were perforated with windows that looked out to the surrounding office, which was filled with police doing their work. And then Mark Fine burst into the East Precinct in his blustery typical style.
What's this all about, Dennis?
She's lying!
This is part of the plan. Do you see that? This changes everything.
Denny said nothing.
Where's Zoe?
Mark dug his heel into the pavement.
They got her before I could. The timing on this was not an accident.
I'm going to get her.
Don't. Let them be. Now is not the time for heroics. When you're stuck in quicksand, the worst thing you can do is struggle.
So now I'm stuck in quicksand?
Dennis, you are in the quickest of all possible sand right now.
Denny wheeled around and started off.
And don't leave the state,
Mark called after him.
And Jesus Christ, Dennis, don't even look at another 15-year-old girl.
But Denny had already rounded the corner and was gone. Hands are the windows to a man's soul. Seeing Denny's handshake was as upsetting for me as it was for him. After Eve's death, he glanced at his hands often, held them before his eyes as if they weren't really his hands at all, held them up and watched them shake. He tried to do it so no one would see.
Nerves,
he would say to me whenever he caught me watching his manual examination.
Stress.
And then he would tuck them into his pants pockets and keep them out of sight. When Tony, another guy from work, and Mike brought me home later that night, Denny was waiting on the dark porch with his hands in his pockets.
Not only do I not want to talk about it, Mark told me not to.
Neither Mike nor Tony moved. It was like they were deciding if they would respect Denny's request to be alone, or if they would storm past him into the house and keep him company by force. They looked at each other and I could smell their anxiety. I wished that Denny would understand the depth of their concern for him.
You be all right? We don't have to worry about the gas oven being left on and you lighting a cigarette?
It's electric and I don't smoke.
You want us to keep Enzo or anything?
No.
Bring you some groceries?
Denny shook his head.
Are you sure you will be all right?
Denny nodded his head.
My phone's always on. 24-hour crisis hotline. Need to talk, need anything. Call me.
They retreated down the walk.
We fed Enzo.
Mike called from the alley. They left and Denny and I went inside. He took his hands from his pockets and held them up to look at them shaking.
Rapists don't get custody of their little girls. See how that works?
I followed him into the kitchen, for a moment concerned that he had lied to Mike and Tony, and that perhaps we did have a gas oven after all. But he didn't go to the oven. He went to the cupboard and took out a glass. Then he reached into where he kept the liquor and took out a bottle. He poured a drink. It was absurd. Depressed, stressed, hands shaking, and now he was going to get himself drunk? I couldn't stand for it. I barked sharply at him. He looked down at me, drink in hand, and I up at him. If I had had hands, I would have opened one of them and slapped him.
What's the matter, Enzo? Too much of a cliché for you?
I barked again.
Don't judge me. That's not your job. Your job is to support me, not judge me.
He drank the drink and then glared at me, and I did judge him. He was acting just as they wanted him to act. They were rattling him, and he was about to quit, and then it would be over, and I'd have to spend the rest of my life with a drunkard who had nothing to do but stare lifelessly out from his dead eyes at pictures flashing by on the TV screen. This wasn't my Denny. This was a pathetic character from a hackneyed television drama, and I didn't like him at all. I left the room thinking I would go to bed, but I didn't want to sleep in the same room as this Denny imposter. I went into Zoe's bedroom, curled up on the floor next to her bed, and tried to sleep, but the memories of the zebra kept me awake. Later, though I don't know how much, he stood in the doorway.
The first time I took you for a drive in my car when you were a puppy, you puked all over the seat,
he said to me.
But I didn't give up on you.
I lifted my head from the ground, not understanding his point.
I put the booze away. I'm better than that.
He turned and walked away. I heard him shuffle around in the living room and then turn on the TV. So he didn't fall hopelessly into the bottle, the refuge of the weak and the maudlin. He got my point. Gestures are all that I have. I found him on the couch watching a video of Eve, Zoe, and me from years ago when we went to Long Beach on the Washington coast. Zoe was a toddler. I remembered that weekend well. We were all so young, it seemed, chasing kites on the wide beach that went on for miles. I sat next to the couch and watched, too. We were so naive. We had no knowledge of where the road would take us, no idea that we would ever be separated. The beach, the ocean, the sky, it was there for us and only for us, a world without end.
No race has ever been won in the first corner,
he said to me.
But plenty of races have been lost there.
I looked at him. He reached out, settled his hand on the crown of my head, and scratched my ear like he has always done.
That's right. If we're going to be a cliché, let's be a positive cliché.
Yes, the race is long. To finish first you must finish. I love few things more than a nice long walk in the drizzle of Seattle. I don't care for the heaviness of real rain. I like the misting, the feeling of the tiny droplets on my muzzle. Denny took me for a walk in the drizzle, and I relished it. Eve had only been dead for a few days, but since her death, I had felt so bottled up and congested, sitting with Denny in the house for much of the time, breathing the same stale air over and over. Denny seemed to crave the change too. Instead of jeans, a sweatshirt, and his yellow slicker, he put on a pair of dark slacks and he wore his black trench coat over a high-necked cashmere sweater. We walked north out of Madison Valley and into the Arboretum. Once past the dangerous part, where there is no walkway and the cars drive well over the safe speed limit, we turned off on the smaller road, and Denny released me from my leash. This is what I love to do. I love to run through a field of wet grass that has not been mowed recently. I love to run, keeping my snout low to the ground, so the grass and the sparkles of water cover my face. I imagine myself as a vacuum cleaner, sucking in all the smells, all the life, a spear of summer grass. It reminds me of my childhood, back on the farm in Spangle, where there was no rain, but there was grass. There were fields, and I ran. I ran, and I ran that day. And Denny walked on, trudging steadily. At the point we usually turned around, we kept going. We crossed the pedestrian bridge, and Denny reattached my leash, and we crossed a larger road, and we were in a new park. I have always loved activity and walking, especially with Denny, my favorite walking partner, and especially in the drizzle, but I have to admit, at that time I was getting quite tired. We had been out for more than 2 hours, and after a long walk like that, I like to go home for playful toweling off and then settle down for a nice long nap. But there was no nap. We kept walking. I recognized 15th Avenue when we reached it, and I knew Volunteer Park quite well. But I was surprised when we went into the Lakeview Cemetery, though I had never been there. Following the paved road to the north, we looped around the central hill and came upon a temporary tent structure under which many people were assembled. They were all dressed nicely, and those who weren't protected from the drizzle by the tent were holding umbrellas. Immediately, I saw Zoe. Ah, the light switch. It's either on or it's off. Denny had dressed for the event. We approached the people, who were slightly disorganized, milling about, their collective attention fragmented. The proceedings had not yet begun. We got very close to them, and then suddenly, someone broke off from the group. A man. And then another man. And another. The three of them walked toward us. One of them was Maxwell. The other two were his sons.
You're not welcome here.
She's my wife, the mother of my child.
You're not welcome here. Leave, or I'll call the police.
You already called them, didn't you?
Maxwell sneered at Denny.
You were warned.
Why are you doing this?
Maxwell pushed up into Denny's personal space.
You've never been good to Eve. And what you did to Annika, I will never trust you with Zoe.
Nothing happened that night.
You are lying.
I am not. Nothing happened. She's lying.
People were beginning to stop and look at Maxwell and Denny.
Please, let's not create a scene at Eve's funeral.
Maxwell took in a breath and then said tersely,
I won't warn you again. You need to leave.
In the distance, Zoe was unable to contain herself any longer. She jumped out of her seat and ran toward us. Maxwell walked away just as Zoe reached us and leapt at Denny.
How's my baby?
How's my daddy?
I'm getting by.
Enzo!
Zoe called out, suddenly locating me beneath her. She squirmed loose of Denny and grabbed me around the neck.
Enzo!
I was surprised and pleased by her hearty greeting, so I licked her face.
You must have been missing Eve terribly,
whispered Trish, who was suddenly at Denny's side.
But to take advantage of a 15-year-old girl?
Denny abruptly straightened and pulled away.
Zoe, Enzo and I are going to watch from a special place. Come on, Enzo.
He bent down and kissed her forehead, and we walked away. Zoe and Trish watched us go. We continued on the circular path and walked up the bump of a hill to the top, where we stood underneath the trees and protected from the lightly falling rain. Watched the whole thing. The people coming to attention, the man reading from the book, the people laying roses on the coffin, and everyone leaving in their cars. When they were all gone, we walked down the hill and we stood before the mound of dirt and we cried. We kneeled and we cried and we grabbed handfuls of the dirt, the mound, and we felt the last bit of her, the last part of her that we could feel, and we cried. And finally, when we could do no more, we stood, and we began the long walk home.
You just heard part 3 of the University of Colorado Denver College of Arts and Media's production of Garth Stein's The Art of Racing in the Rain. This radio special of the One Book, One Denver selection was adapted and directed by Terry Dodd and recorded by Lauren Brigitzer. Stu Basham is a sound designer. Enzo is played by Alex Evert. Denny is played by J. Nick Dickert. Eve is played by Hannah Reeves. Zoe is played by Demi De Herrera. And the ensemble is played by Craig Ewing, Linda McQuaid, Emily Lay, and Jesse Carruth. One Book, One Denver is coordinated by Arts and Venues Denver. You can find a link to more information about One Book, One Denver and hear the past episodes of this series by going to our website at cpr.org and typing One Book, One Denver in the search bar. Our normal broadcast of the BBC will resume on Friday. Be sure to tune in tomorrow at this same time as we conclude our presentation of The Art of Racing in the Rain.